after show. You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 40. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. The guest this week is Jared Perrott. Jared Perrott is a guy that I've known for a little while. We actually don't mention that in the episode. It's kind of strange. I've known Jared since high school. And Jared's done some work for me in his current role, so I was happy to reconnect with him again. What does he do? I haven't even told you what he does yet. Jared owns Fast Frame of Lodo. You can find Fast Frame of Lodo at fastframeoflodo.com. How convenient, right? They're located at 1528 15th Street, and you can reach them by phone at 303-623-7263. I've never actually gave a phone number on here, but first time for everything, right? Episode 40, why not try some new things? What do I talk about with Jared? Jared and I talk about what small business ownership means. In 2009, he took a risk. He had just come from college. He hadn't just come from college, but he recently graduated college, worked on a movie. We talk about the movie. It's an awesome piece of cinema, sort of B-movie style, really campy, really fun, called Face Eater. And yeah, you heard me right, Face Eater. And so he directed that, had a great premiere. He talks about the process of making that film a little bit. 2009, height of the recession, couldn't find a job. So saw an opportunity, opened up Fast Frame of Lodo, bought it for, like, got a great price, bought low, and turned it into his business. And 5 years running now, they've been doing great, great things. When we kick off the interview, we talk a little bit about some of the awards that he's won. And customer service is at the forefront of everything that Jared does. It informs every aspect of the way that he runs his business. That's reflected in the amount of awards they've won. Named to the A-list, the 7 News A-list a number of times. They just recently got a big one from 5280. I'm going to let Jared tell you all about this. I just want to preview it because the way Jared runs his business is applicable to so many different things. The way he gets involved in the community, the way he's reached out to the sports teams. He's a big sports fan, so he's the official framer of the Rockies, Nuggets, Avalanche, Mammoth. Not the Broncos, so if the Broncos are listening, hey, what are you doing? You got to get on it with Jared. Hi thee down to Fast Frame of Lodo because Jared does exceptional work. When you listen to this episode, you just get a sense for a guy who really cares and is really passionate about what he does in everything that he does. He also tells a story about reaching out to Dick Monfort. I mean, passionate guy, right? Jared, passionate sports fan, wrote a letter to Dick Monfort, showed up the next day at work, or maybe a few days later at work, got a call from Dick Monfort. Now, you know, Dick Monfort has been in the news for some fan interactions, but this one might surprise you the way it went. So it paints a picture of a really engaged guy talking with another really engaged guy. So I think you'll really dig this episode. This one is our 40th episode, which means it's time to pay some love to our sponsor. They've been with us for all 40 episodes, 4 Degrees. Number 4, DEGRE.ES, proud sponsors of the John of All Trades podcast. They built our website. They host us, and they help us optimize the podcast. So be sure to check them out for anything you may need, web-based or otherwise. Campaigns, social media, text messaging services, they really do it all. So go to 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES, and they will hook you up just right. Tell them you heard about it on the John of All Trades podcast. You know, show them that their sponsorship is doing great things. And the great things we are going to bring you today, episode 40 with Jared Perrott, owner of Fast Frame of Lodo, fastframeoflodo.com. He talks about what sets them apart, and one of the things is customer service, so he's going to get into that in the episode. Without further ado, here is episode 40, Jared Perrott. Jared Perrott. Thanks for joining us, man. Glad to be here. We are sitting here in Fast Frame of Lodo in your shop, and it's a great looking shop. How's it been going lately?
Thanks for having me. I'm very honored to be on your show. Yeah, we're doing great. You know, we started in 2009 during the height of the recession. And
you launched in 2009?
Yeah, yeah. We started in 2009, and it was, you know, it was very difficult at the beginning because the store had been in existence since 2004, I believe.
Okay.
And, you know, for various reasons, and as well as the recession, the store took a pretty big hit, and it was either going to close or sell for a very affordable price, which is the only reason I was able to do it, because I was 29 at the time.
Buy low, right?
What's that?
Buy low, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. But, you know, it was scary. The first 2 years were pretty tough, but now, knock on wood, we're in a pretty solid spot, and we're doing really well.
Yeah, you guys seem to be killing it in terms of, you know, I was looking at this a little bit, and, I mean, I've been a customer of yours, and
yeah.
you guys do exceptional work.
Thank you.
But, you know, you guys are consistently named to the A-list, and in terms of, like, 5280 Outstanding Customer Service Awards, things like that, I mean, they seem to be piling up.
Yeah, no, we've won the A-list, I think, in 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2014.
What happened in 13?
Yeah, I got married, and you know, I was traveling, and it
right.
just didn't really have a whole lot of time to put, you know, towards it. But
right,
yeah, and then the 5280, we got we were named best customer service in the city of Denver, not just frame shops, but any, you know, every business.
Wow,
and that was huge for us.
That's like a crazy award.
Yeah, yeah, and it was totally out of the blue. I did not expect it. They called and just said. They were asking me some pretty random questions,
right?
But also, you know, being kind of secretive, and I started to think that might be what it was for, but I didn't want to get my hopes up, you know,
right, of course.
It's a great honor for any business to be in 5280.
Well, I mean, you know, ultimate customer service, you know, when you're put against every other business and they give it to, I'm assuming they give it to a different business every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Well, and you know, customer service, I have my background, a lot of my professional background was in customer service. And, you know, when I started, it was very difficult here. I mean, just as far as getting customers in the door, retaining yeah. customers, it was a tough time in 2009. So we always try and go above and beyond. And we to this day, we treat every customer the same as we did in 2009 when it was very, very tough, you know.
So I'm curious. I want to come back to that. But okay. First, if you would... Give us just the spiel about the types of things that Fast Frame of Lodo does, the, you know, your business, your philosophy. Give me the elevator pitch.
Well, we provide expert custom framing, and we can frame just about anything. Photography, paintings, fine art, sports memorabilia, sports jerseys.
Yeah, I'm looking at a bunch of jerseys, and you have like helmets and stuff and shadow boxes. And
yeah, sports is surprisingly, I'd say it's probably 50% of our business.
Really?
Is sports framing. We frame for all of the major sports teams in Denver with the exception of the Broncos. And right. We sell, you know, helmets, bats, we frame bats.
Yeah.
It's hockey sticks. I mean, you name it, we can pretty much frame it.
So the sports teams come to you to frame their stuff?
Correct, yeah.
That's badass.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm a big sports fan, as a lot of people know. And that was kind of one thing I really wanted to pursue when I started the business, is getting a lot of the sports teams to come in here. And we frame for the Rockies, the Nuggets, Avalanche, the Colorado Mammoth, the Colorado Rapids, and prior to this year, the Denver Cutthroats.
Yeah, rest in peace, Denver Cutthroats, apparently. That's,
yeah.
That's really too bad.
Yeah, it is. They're nice folks.
Yeah. I have a colleague who was pretty involved with them, and it seemed like a really like familial sort of community-based, just a great vibe within that organization.
Yeah, it was owned by a husband and wife. They're very nice people. They've come in and framed personal things with us, and it was really, really sad to see them go, but you know, it sounds like they're gonna come back, so
oh good,
hopefully that'll be the case.
Yeah, most definitely. So I'm curious, how did you sort of cultivate these relationships with like the Rockies and the Avs and the Nuggets?
Well, everything was, you know, kind of happened in stages with everything regarding the business and buying it, learning it, you know. It was, you know, it's been a lot of work, but very rewarding. But as far as, you know, trying to develop a relationship with the teams, I just, you know, write letters. I would make phone calls. I would, you know, make donations.
Basically cold calling, essentially.
Yeah, to an extent. But, you know, a lot of it is just, it's kind of who you know. I'm very involved in the Lodo district. I serve on the board of the district. And I'm also the co-chair of the Lodo Cares Committee. And there's the Rockies, Nuggets, and Avs are all members. So I've developed relationships in that respect as well.
So you start networking with them a little bit. And it sort of develops from there.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and I mean, you get to know when you serve on any type of board with professionals, you get to know them. And
sure.
For instance, like we just made a donation. We teamed up with the Colorado Rockies, and Jim Kellogg, who's the vice president of community outreach, he donated an authentic Troy Tulowitzki signed jersey. We framed it, and we donated it to the Third Way Center on behalf of Lodo Cares, and that was really, really great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So Jared, I'm curious. Let's go back a little bit. So take me back to 2009. You are, you know, I imagine you have some distance from college at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And what were you doing before you decided to buy this?
It's kind of an interesting story. I graduated from Fort Lewis College in 2003. During college, my minor, I guess you could say, was film production. Mm-hmm. And before I left, I had met a published writer and a comic book historian down in Durango, and he kind of pitched an idea of making a short film, and I, you know, had interest in that, and I was like, yeah, well, maybe, you know, I can come down a few weekends, you know, during each month, and we can shoot it, and well, eventually it turned into a feature film,
right?
And I realized quickly that I wasn't going to be able to make it while living, you know, in Denver and commuting to Durango, so I made the decision, you know, I moved back. I couldn't find any work at the time. And this was in 2003, 2004.
So you said your minor was in film. What was your major in?
My major was in English.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, fellow liberal arts right here. So perfect.
So I decided to move back to Durango and make this this feature film. Originally, it was going to take 2 years. It ended up taking four. And
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people would think, you know, running a business is difficult, and it is, but making a feature film with no money was definitely the most difficult thing I've ever done. But
yeah,
long story short.
So what did you do? Did you just cobble it together then with just were people like volunteering their time?
And yeah, everybody's volunteering their time and money and,
wow,
and efforts. And 4 years later, we finally got it done. And
so this was in like 2007 or so?
Yeah, I mean, we completed it, I'd say, around 2008.
Okay.
And, you know, it premiered to like four or five consecutive sold-out shows at the Abbey Theater in Durango. And, you know, for what it was, you know, I think it turned out better than we could have hoped.
I've seen it. It's it's called Face Eater, right?
Yeah, it's called Face Eater. It's the name kind of says it all. It's a campy B-movie. you know, you don't take it too seriously. It's a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah. Well, you're right. I think you've summed it up well. It's campy. It's weird. It's exquisitely weird.
Yeah.
Which is, a lot of the charm of it.
Yeah. It was written by a guy who in his own right is fairly famous in the comic book industry, John McClure. But, you know, he's really into comics and, you know, it lends a lot from like the old EC comics of the 50s. Right. And, you know, it was meant to be cheesy. You know, looking back, I watched it for the first time a few years ago. Or no, I'm sorry, a few months ago. And
you rewatched it?
Yeah, for the first time in years. And, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed about half of it. And then half of it I was kind of cringing. But, you know,
sure,
at the time and place we're all in, it was the thing to, you know, the right thing to do for all of us.
Yeah, it's a reflection of sort of your sensibilities at the time and your energies. And, you know, if memory serves, some of the inspiration for me sort of, it seemed like you guys took a little bit from like the Tex Avery style cartoons, like the old sort of madcap, like Looney Tunes type stuff.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, it's just really fun. Like that's the type of experience that is one of the great things about going to the movies.
Yeah. No, I'm a big movie fan, as I know you are.
Yeah.
My big influence was John Carpenter.
Oh, nice.
Like early John Carpenter, not you know, later.
Not like John Carpenter's Vampires, which
that was kind of the cutoff, actually. That's the first movie he made where I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. But I kind of enjoyed that one. I mean, James Woods is wearing like a leather jacket in the desert.
Yeah.
Like the whole movie, and you go, what are you doing?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not a bad movie, but it's kind of, I could see his style was kind of changing, and I'm kind of the mind that, you know, directing filmmaking is kind of a young man's game.
Okay.
I think, you know, when you're younger, you're more hungry. You know, sure. you haven't proved yourself, so you try harder. And once you get that budget, once you have all these connections, you may unconsciously not try as hard, you know.
You get a little complacent, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
But, I mean, and which is not to say, I mean, you're by no stretch an old man here.
But, no.
But, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. So, you complete Face Eater, which, just on its own, if that title doesn't grab you, then...
I thought it was a great title.
That's, yeah. I mean...
Yeah, so we finished Face Eater in 2008. I, you know, hung around Durango a little bit longer. I had a corporate job down there. And
what were you doing?
I was working for a credit card processing company called Mercury Payment Systems. They're a Durango company. Now they are in Denver. Basically, just I wasn't able to relocate to Denver in the position I was in, and
right.
I really wanted to get back to Denver. So I put in my notice and moved back, and
just sort of on a wing and a prayer at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I have family up here and
sure.
That made the transition a little bit easier, but, in retrospect, at the time I was like, oh, maybe I didn't make the right decision, but, I moved back and again, same as in, 2003, I moved back. I had, a difficult time finding a job.
Sure.
And I was, working at my dad's store, which is, he owns a Fast Frame over in Cherry Creek. And, I was just doing some odd jobs for him. And
so you're kind of a legacy in this business then
a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. You could say that. But, contrary to what people think, I had, really no framing experience.
Okay.
I just kind of did a little bit of everything. And, so it would have been probably around the summer of 2009. My dad heard about this store that was available. And, like I said previously, it was either... it's going to be sold at a very low price or it's going to close. So,
yeah.
I got a great deal on it and you talk about a wing and a prayer.
Yeah.
That was, it was a pretty big gamble at the time, cause it was a pretty scary time.
Was it a Fast Frame? Like
yeah.
at the time? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's this location has always been a frame shop, but,
okay.
It hasn't always been a Fast Frame, but from 2004, gotcha. It was Fast Frame of Lodo.
Okay, so Fast Frame is there's like a corporate entity, right? But is it like a franchise?
It is a franchise. All the stores are locally owned. The difference would be, as opposed to like a Quiznos, for instance,
right?
You have to buy all your materials from Quiznos.
Okay,
so that, in that respect, Quiznos would be more of a corporate situation. We have no corporate involvement. We buy our materials locally, so. All the money we spend stays local. All
nice.
The money spent here stays local. So, there's no corporate involvement. There's no, standards that I need to keep up with. Their Fast Frame is a great company. They're there if we need them. But, truth be told, we don't rely on them a whole lot.
Sure.
So.
No, I mean, it's got to help a little bit maybe with some brand recognition.
Yeah. Yeah, and as far as tech support, if we ever have an issue,
oh, sure, sure.
They're there to help us. They're a great group of people. They're based out of Thousand Oaks, California. And, great company. But the nice thing is there's really no intrusion. They're just, this is your business, and call us if you need help, basically.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds great. So in 2009, you buy this. You get a great deal on it. All of a sudden, you're a business owner, right?
Yeah.
So what was that like? You got this store. You got to get people in the door. What came next?
Well, it's just a learning process like anything else. Month in, I get a handle on the software, the framing software we use. Like in the next month, I'm still trying to figure out, how to use QuickBooks. And then, then I start, working on advertising, but at the beginning money is tight, so you have to be creative. But
So what were you doing in those early days?
Well, my first big step was getting the website refreshed because that's a pretty important thing. And these were kind of the days before social media. I mean, Facebook did exist, but it wasn't really geared towards business.
No, that's a good point. And the layout was much different. It wasn't terribly intuitive compared to what we have now. I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely was not, what we have today. So, I mean, you know, there's no really Yelp. I don't even know if Yelp was in existence. You had Google was big. So I guess my focus would have been, you know, on the website and Google getting our web presence. But, you know, as the years have gone by, you know, we've definitely integrated into all those other aspects.
If, as you look back on sort of opening this business in your very early days on it, what is something that you would like to tell yourself, that present you would like to tell 2009 you?
Wow, that's a very good question. you know, I think given the circumstances, I did the best that I could. You learn things, and I think, you know, I think making mistakes is part of the learning process, and I'm glad, you know, whatever mistakes I made, I'm glad that I made them because it taught me a lesson.
Sure.
You know, I guess if there's one thing I could tell myself would be, you know, to get involved in the community a little bit earlier than I did.
Interesting.
But at the time, you know, I had one employee, so it was hard for me to get out of the store and get involved. You know, I had to be here.
Yeah.
But the employee wasn't full time, so a lot of times it was just me here.
Wow.
You know, now, for instance, we have four framers, so that allows me a little bit more flexibility. But, you know, I think mistakes happen for a reason, and you hopefully learn from them.
Sure. Could it be something as simple also as just saying to former you who might have been panicking a little bit? I don't know if you were panicking at all. I'm putting words in your mouth here, but
yeah,
could it be as simple as, you know, hey, 5 years from now, I'm from 5 years from now, we're not standing in front of this place with a cup in our hand.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always gave it 100%. I know that. So, I can't fault myself for that, but you know, I was trying really hard, and I think and I still try hard, and I think that's why, you know, we are where we are today, you know?
So I know, I think this will be episode 40 when it airs on December 10th. I know in talking to a lot of other entrepreneurs, small business owners, that you're never fully comfortable. Like you're never, right? You're never sitting on your yacht, you know, lighting cigars off $100 bills.
Yeah.
But at what point do you think you started to feel like, okay, you know what? I'm going to be all right. And you started to feel like you maybe had a little bit more stability.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking to some family friends that just started kind of their own private medical practice. And we were talking recently, and it's funny. I honestly think a lot of it is hard work. And then there's also a lot of luck in there. Like, you know, I remember, for instance, you know, in 2010 or something, you know, money was starting to get a little bit low, but, you know, a certain commercial order came along at just the right time.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, there's just some things that happen, and you don't know what it is, if it's luck or you know, synchronicity or right. you know, hard work. I think it's everything. But, you know, but like you said, the one thing with owning a business is you don't relax the way you were able to, I guess, sometimes in a corporate job. Like, you know, when I go home on Friday night, I'm not looking at it like this is the weekend. It's like, you know, right. I have a business. So, but you know, honestly, there's not a lot of security in anything. You know, anybody in a corporate job could lose their job at any moment.
Yeah.
It's the same for a small business, you know? So, I mean, there's not a whole lot of security. I guess it's just the difference would be that it's not all on you.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. You've got pretty much everything on the line here. You know, at the end of the day, it's the buck sort of stops with you. Whereas with a corporate job, you've got a lot that's beyond your control.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, I think as long as any business owner can honestly, you know, go to sleep at night and say, you know, I'm giving it everything I can, I'm doing the best I can, that's all you can really do.
Yeah. You know? No, 100%. So it's funny, you know, you said, is it luck? Is it synchronicity? Some of it, you just kind of have to have faith, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know,
just like do the good work, right?
Yeah.
Continue to do the good work. Take your opportunities where you can, and hopefully everything else falls in place.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, I think that's a sentiment for life in general, not just you know, being a small business owner. You know,
right. So one of the other things that I'm interested in is, you know, you can get stuff framed. I mean, you could do it yourself, I guess, if you really wanted to, but you know, there are competitors there, you know, there are big corporate competitors. There are also sort of niche custom framing shops. How do you guys differentiate yourselves?
Well, you know, there's many different ways we differentiate ourselves. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in being friends with your competitors. I'm friends with, you know, all the competitors I know, I'm friends with them. And I think that's very important because, you know, sometimes you need to help each other out. Like if a piece of equipment breaks,
okay, right,
can I use your saw or, you know, like that. We basically, unlike many other frame shops, we do offer a 30-day design guarantee,
okay,
on everything we frame. So basically that would basically mean that, you know, when you're in the store and you're designing a piece, you're not 100% sure what it's going to look like. You think it'll look nice, but you're not positive.
Right, right.
Well, you know, say you come in and you pick it up and it looks good, but it didn't quite measure up to what your expectations were. We give our customers 30 days. They can take the piece home and hang it on their wall. And if for some reason if there's anything they don't like, whether it's the mat, the frame,
sure,
they can bring it back within 30 days. We will swap out the materials free of charge.
Wow.
And, we don't want just an order. We want a customer, and we want our customers to be happy with the things they frame. So that gives people a nice peace of mind. We also have a lifetime guarantee on everything we frame. So if anything were to ever happen, if something slips or moves, which can happen.
Like even if it falls off the wall and like it's user error?
To an extent, yeah.
Okay.
You know, if a mover comes in and bumps it off the wall, that might be one thing. But, you know, in our dry climate, you know, sometimes things dry up, and if a photo slips or something, they can bring it back. We'll fix it.
Okay. I get you.
We also, you know, and, you know, like we've been talking about, customer service is paramount here. I make sure that everybody, you know, we hire is fully aware of this. You know, we want a customer, not just one order. So,
yeah.
So, you mentioned you have four framers here. You don't do any of the framing yourself, do you?
I don't.
Okay.
No.
You're usually working the front.
I'm working the front, and I try and work with customers as much as I can, and do the normal day-to-day operations and bookkeeping and all that stuff.
So what's take me through like what a typical day is like for you?
Well, I get here. We open at 10 a.m. I get here around 9:30, and that's just kind of a way for me to you know, get stuff going for the day. If I need to get some bills paid or, you know,
right,
address some emails, make some phone calls, I'll do that.
That admin stuff, right?
Yeah, pretty much. From then on, you know, it's kind of just working with customers. You know, when they bring in something in, I'll assist them through the design process and do that. And then, you know, just throughout the days, I'll perform various tasks around here.
Yeah,
just bookkeeping and, you know, just stuff, just your general, you know, day-to-day stuff.
So you guys are open from 10 until?
10 to 6 Monday through Friday and 10 to 5 on Saturdays.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it's got to be weird on the weekends, especially here in Lodo, because, you know, 10 to 6 during, because you're kind of in the central business district.
Right.
In a lot of ways. So, you know, the weekend traffic, whereas, you know, if you're, say, in suburbia, people tend to be running around out there a little bit more. But here, I mean, you've got to have probably a fairly substantial, like, business clientele in that regard.
Yeah. The beauty of being downtown is we absorb not only the corporate business, but, you know, a lot of people work downtown.
Yeah, so, yeah. That's what
so
I mean. Yeah.
They'll swing by on their lunch break and take them all right over, get it done, and so, you know, we kind of absorb all of that business from all around, you know, the suburbia. But, you know, it's funny you mentioned Saturdays because when I first started, Saturdays were absolutely dead down here. And now it's the polar opposite. It's like it's probably our busiest day of the week.
No kidding.
And I think that's just because of the influx of people moving to the city. You know, people want to live downtown. And
yeah, so that brings me to another question. Being downtown and being a small business sort of down here in Lodo in the Central Business District, what has changed in 2009 to now?
Well, it's changed a lot. During the recession, not a lot of businesses were opening. Businesses were leaving for the most part. But now, you know, Lodo is its most vibrant place in the city. And, you know, with Union Station, of course, opening, it's going to get even crazier.
Yeah, which were what, two blocks from?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And, you know, and it's only going to get bigger. And, you know, I think 20 years from now, the city is going to have a very different look to it.
Wow. Okay. So that brings me to another question. 20 years from now, where do you see this business? Where do you see yourself?
Well, I, you know, hopefully we're right here in the same spot, just providing our excellent services.
Wow. Okay. So you've mentioned Lodo quite a bit, and as we're talking about it, I noticed something on Facebook, and if you don't want to go into great detail about this, that's fine.
Sure.
But you have a number of parking meters in front of you, and I noticed even as I walked up, there's like five parking meters, four of them had a car sharing service
right.
Parked in them. Is that tough for you to sort of navigate?
You know, it is. Let me start out by saying, you know, I love the concept of the car sharing.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea. No issues with that.
No, you know, absolutely
my
not.
Problem as a business owner is, you know, what I see a lot is these cars, they'll sit outside and not move for the entire day. You know, I don't mind car sharing is if the cars move, but
right.
You know, like as you look outside the window right now, there's, you know, there's six spots and they're taken up by four
car
car sharing vehicles. But, you know, I think it's a great idea. I think it needs some fine tuning. You know, one suggestion I had given to the company in question was, you know, putting an option on the app that says, you know, why are you using this vehicle, you know, for shopping, for commuting to work, to go right. to lunch or, you know, just so they can get some analytics, because I don't think that they're fully aware of, you know, why and how people are using these cars.
Well, and maybe as a result of that, some of their secondary impacts.
Right.
As a result of that.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, any business owner you talk to down here, it's a concern of theirs because,
sure.
you know, I mean, I know a business owner who's lost employees because they can't find parking. I mean, parking in Lodo is a bit difficult enough.
It's tough. And spots keep, they seem to be eroding a little bit more as yeah. more development comes.
Yeah.
It's kind of a mixed blessing in that regard then.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I recently heard that the car sharing, they're increasing the numbers of the vehicles
wow.
in the city. So I was thinking, you know, maybe get a lot or some
sure.
sort of a garage where these can be, you know, parked or transported. You know, just so it has, you know, minimal impact on the businesses. And I mean, even with Union Station, the construction, and then you had Coors Field last year with the party deck construction.
Right.
There was a lot of construction down here, and all those construction companies leased out all the spaces, all the lots and the garages down here.
Really?
So, you know, my fellow, you know, business owners down here, they had employees quitting because, like, I cannot find parking.
Yeah.
Well, and it's expensive on top of that.
Yeah. Well, I think you're seeing that in Cherry Creek North, too,
oh, yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
You know, you'll hear a lot of griping about this construction is just really putting a dent
yeah.
in our business.
Yeah. And, I feel horrible for a lot of the businesses in Cherry Creek. My dad's still in Cherry Creek, and he personally knows quite a few business owners that have had to close the doors. And these are, you know, successful businesses before this construction.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
So they were after the city for a long time to get that project underway, so when they're finally doing it, they don't want to tell them no, but it's like, you know, what do we do about
yeah.
about getting, you know, not
short-term impacts? Yeah. Another thing I'm curious about, because I've seen you post about this before, which night in Lodo do you refer to as amateur night?
Well, there's a couple. New Year's, of course.
Yeah, because I feel the same way. Whenever you post about this, I'm like, right on, man, I'm with you.
Yeah, but you know, the worst is the CSU.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah. Every year, and it doesn't matter, you know, every year you can count on it. I walk in here the next day, and there is trash, blood,
you vomit,
know, other, you know, bodily fluids outside the doors, but, you know, plants ripped up, tree branches broken off. It's insane.
Good Lord. And Mile High isn't even that close to here.
No.
Yeah. And it just sort of spills into the city at that point.
Yeah, you know, people, they're at the game having a good time, and then they want to go have some drinks in Lodo. There's a lot of bars down here, so
yeah.
I understand, you know, why they would gravitate this way.
Yeah.
But it's not fun, you know. Last year I was out of town, and I was very, very worried because, you know.
Were you just praying for the
Yeah, you know, I was, like, asking friends, like, hey, you know, if you're driving around, could you just swing by the store. It was a Sunday, so we were closed.
Right.
So I was like, could you swing by the store and make sure there's no, you know, broken windows
yeah.
or, you know.
Make sure no one painted something obscene on
exactly.
one of the
yeah.
windows or something. Yeah, gross. That's terrible. I myself am not a New Year's fan just because people who spend the entire year not drinking all decide to get together in like one place and all drink together and you go, no.
Yeah. Well, you know, alcohol and crowds, they don't always mix very well.
They don't always, yeah. That, I would say they rarely. Yeah. But I'm curious about I want to expand on something else.
Okay.
You're a big sports fan.
Yeah.
And pretty much always have been, right?
Yeah.
I know that I would say outside of your relationship with the Rockies, you've had some interaction with some of their leadership. Is that accurate?
With the Rockies leadership?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was surprised because I remember you've written a letter to them,
mm-hmm.
and you actually got one back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Can you just take us through that experience a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. Growing up, we didn't have baseball in Denver.
Yeah. And, I remember.
And in 1992, the Rockies, they were granted the expansion team and moved to Denver, or not moved, but I guess
established
themselves in Denver. And up to that point, I had been primarily a football fan because that's all we had. I mean, we had the Denver Zephyrs, but right. It wasn't quite the same. You know, so 92, I'd never experienced baseball, like Major League Baseball, and I thought it was like one of the greatest things in the world. And, you know, I was so excited, and it got me really interested in the sport. And I played football, but I started playing baseball and just kind of fell in love with the game. As the years kind of wore on, I, like many people, I kind of lost a little bit of my excitement for the Rockies just because, the winning years were kind of few and far between.
Yeah, it was kind of tough to watch them. You felt like they could have been better.
Yeah.
And you go, God, what is the issue here?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a learning process for them as well, because, you know, they're the only team that plays at this altitude. And
yeah.
I think there is, some credence to that argument. But yeah, you know, so around 2007, I was still in Durango, but the Rockies went to the World Series, and I thought it rejuvenated my love of the game and baseball. But, you know, that was a magical experience, as I'm sure you remember.
Oh, it was fantastic.
And, you know, I moved back in 2009, and then that year the Rockies were back in the playoffs. I was at the last game against the Phillies, where I think Houston Street gave up like a grand slam, and I
happened to be in Maui for that game.
Oh yeah,
so it was probably the best way to deal with that.
Yeah.
I got married 2 days before, and so we were sitting on the patio watching the game. And I can't remember who the last at bat was. I want to say it was like Seth Smith or someone just struck out.
I think it was Tulowitzki. I think
it was
a called strike three.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
And so we go,
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the beach.
Yeah.
So,
well, anyway, it was such a, like, we were just killing them in that game, too. And,
yeah.
Like, Giambi, I think, hit a grand slam. And,
yeah.
You know, and it was just the wind, you know, that called strike three just took the wind right out of the park.
Just totally deflated.
You know, and then we were back, you know, 2010, we had a really, really strong team again. I mean, they lost Tulowitzki to an injury.
Yeah.
But even at the All-Star break, I think we were tied for first. And
yeah, they just folded down the stretch that year. I remember that.
Yeah, it was 3 weeks, the last 3 weeks of the season, they just collapsed.
Yeah.
And they were healthy. They had everybody.
Yeah, it was just like a wet fart of an ending to a season.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was very frustrating because, like, that team, the 2009-2010 teams, I thought were really strong.
Yeah.
And it was very frustrating. But since then, everything's kind of gone downhill. And, you know, I know Dick Monfort. I know a lot of the Monforts. They all frame here.
Oh, cool.
The nicest people you could ever meet. You know, one day I just, I think it was 2012, I wrote him a letter. And I was just, you know, I don't want to be, you know, have like the lynch mob mentality
that
a lot of the fans have. And a lot of them... I don't think they fully understand, you know, how things work, but
right. And you didn't want to be unfair either.
No, absolutely. And you know, I think he's done some great things for that team. But I wrote him a letter and I just said, hey, you know, I'm just really disappointed in the way that this team has collapsed these last few years. I don't understand some of the loyalty to a couple people in the front office. And,
sure.
But you know, the letter was very respectful and. Oddly enough, you know.
But firm, I imagine.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't assume to know. I'm not a baseball executive. I don't assume to know everything about the sport.
Or rather not firm, but maybe pointed.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I don't pretend to know everything about how the front office of a team works. And, you know, so I'm sure he knows a lot more about that than I do. But,
right.
You know, I just said, hey, you know, I just kind of let him know how I was feeling as a fan and you know, at the time, too, I was like, you know, if we don't start winning, we're going to start losing some of our best players. And And that would be unfortunate. But yeah, a couple days later, I get into the store here like 9:30 and I get this phone call and hey, this is Dick Monfort. How you doing?
Wow.
And, he took probably 30 minutes, chatted with me and,
just talking through some of the things that you brought up.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think there's a lot of things that are unfair that are written about him. There's no doubt in my mind he wants to win. You know, he's very passionate about the team. He loves the team. You know, from my perspective, I just think that he needs to get some, you know, some good people under him. Like Charlie McGregor died in 2010, and since then, that position's been vacant. Yeah. But, you know, Jeff Breidich, the new GM, is a customer here as well. Really nice guy, really bright. So, you know, I think that's a step in the right direction for them because he's a Harvard graduate. I think he'll think outside the box.
Good. So you're optimistic about...
I am. Yeah. I am cautiously optimistic. You know, but you have to keep in mind every year I'm like come March and April, yeah. I'm like ready to go for baseball. So
right.
I did need to calm down just for my own sake, not you know.
Yeah, temper yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I share some of that enthusiasm. In 2012... I was in Vegas before the season started, and the Rockies were going off at like 25-1.
Yeah, I remember that.
To win, I think, the World Series. And when I went to Caesars, they had them at 50-1, and I go, hey, look at that. That's good value. So I picked up that ticket, and I remember Guthrie started opening day and looked really good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, this is going to be a great season. And then, wow, just I think it was it May that was just so awful that year?
Yeah.
So every year I'm like, okay, they're going to be better than people think.
Yeah. And you know, I think the talent is definitely there. And like I said earlier, I think the altitude does play a role here.
Sure.
In both pitching and the health of the players. And that's something that, you know, I don't know how you combat that, because if you're playing here and then leaving and coming back, you have to adjust each time. How do you make that, you know, your dominant park when you have to do the same thing that other teams have to do? I mean, you play more games here, but you have to adjust every time you come and you go. And I don't know how you use that to your advantage when you're in the same position as the other teams.
Yeah, that's tough. And, I mean, it's got to grind you down pretty fast, too.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, your endurance and things like that.
And in this last year, to be, you know, totally fair, I think they had a lot of freak injuries with, you know, broken hands and fingers. And,
right.
Just a lot of tough luck, you know. I think if the team could stay healthy and if they could get some decent pitching, you don't need... you know, aces here, and you're probably not going to get them here. But I think if you can stay healthy and have some decent pitching, they could win.
Yeah. And guys who – some fearless guys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in terms of pitching, that's really what you need, guys who are not intimidated by Coors Field.
Like, yeah.
De La Rosa is a good example of that.
Yeah. I mean, it can be done here. Just how do you find that?
Yeah.
That
well, it's a puzzle.
Yeah.
And you've got 30 other teams trying to figure out the same puzzle. So
yeah.
And as an illustration of your sort of baseball fandom, shop mascot.
Oh, right. Yeah, we do have a shop mascot here. He's going to be three this next week, a little American Eskimo named Hilton after Todd Helton.
He's adorable. You I don't know if you do this intentionally as part of your marketing, but you feature photos of him.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's got to be intentional, because who doesn't love an adorable little dog?
Yeah. Right? No, I it's definitely intentional. And the sad thing is, like, he gets more likes than like anything we
like any business related
stuff. Yeah. Yeah. People love Helton, and you know, I really love the little guy, so you know, I try and incorporate him into as many things as I can.
That is awesome. So I know we're approaching sort of our time here. I want to be sensitive to sort of we're sitting here doing this during business hours. At one point, a customer actually came in and picked up a piece of art, which was kind of amusing. But my last question, and I asked this to quite a few people, is in terms of being a small business owner and being a successful small business owner, and I don't think you would argue with me. You've been very successful here in terms of building this and establishing it. And I mean, you've just won this award from 5280. What is sort of the most important thing for you to do, be, or have? And it doesn't have to be one thing, but.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think on a daily basis, you need to, you know, and I I tell myself this, you know, I try to tell myself this every day. Never, ever, ever take your customers for granted or your success for granted. Like, you know.
Meaning said, what exactly?
Well, you know, like you said, you're never comfortable as a small business owner. But, you know, if you get to a certain point where you're doing well, you can't change your mindset and start operating differently because you're more successful. You need, you know, I try and remember the 29-year-old kid who is struggling to get people in the door here
right
every day, you know, and I don't take it for granted. I appreciate every customer who walks in the door, and I try and make them feel welcome and valued. But, you know, I think in a lot of ways, you know, the more a business grows, you lose that interaction with the customers, and that's why I still try to interact with everybody who comes in the door, you know.
Okay. So basically, I mean, this is going to sound trite, but staying true to your core where, you know, you've won this customer service award, and I imagine your volume of customers now compared to when you started, where, I mean, you could really focus on each customer if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And the volume of them is greater, but the mindset stays the same.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but, you know, we're the number one store in Colorado out of all the Fast Frame stores, and we're number 7 in the country.
No kidding.
As far as sales volume. So yeah, you know, though I may not be able to interact with every customer because right. I'm working with somebody else most likely, or if I've stepped out for lunch or something, you know, everybody who walks in here is going to get the best service possible, and if there's ever, you know, any issue, we're going to take care of it no matter what it is.
Yeah.
And you know, the bigger, you know, the more your company grows, a lot of times that kind of mentality goes out the window, you know?
Sure.
For instance, we had a customer who came in yesterday, who had a package delivered from, you know, from one of the big, shipping companies. And, I believe those are all, franchises as well, but right. they're putting them through the ringer, over a package. And it's like, you know, if you want these people to come back, yeah. just take care of them and they'll come back. I mean, I strongly disagree with businesses that nickel and dime people. Sometimes you gotta, you know, like that saying, you gotta spend money to make money, and yeah. But you also want to retain your customers, you know.
Well, it's funny, when I talked to the Jay Titterington episode, he's an auto broker. He said, you know, the dealership will try and squeeze every last yeah. nickel out of you when you're buying a car.
Yeah,
he's like, I make the same amount of money on every transaction I do, so I need to create a customer for life. I need you to come back again and again and again.
Right.
And so what you're describing, I mean, so many people are so focused on, you know, squeezing every last nickel that they step over a dollar to pick up a dime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, it's amazing. You know, I was in an establishment the other day, having lunch, and they're like, oh, you owe 15 cents on this, or, you know, right. I filled out a survey. I got a free lunch. You're like, oh, well, you owe 15 cents. It's like, okay. You know,
you can't just write that yeah. off.
And I mean, you know, you know, with customers that come in, we have a coupon on our website for $40 off.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, how many businesses give away just give away $40? And I'm not saying you should give away the farm, but I'm saying, you know, if you argue with people or challenge them on every little yeah. cent, you know, that's going to be something they remember, you know.
Yeah, they're going to remember you sort of reaching in their pockets.
Yeah.
And so, but I mean, this philosophy, I was really struck when you said you believe in being friendly with your competitors.
Yeah.
I mean, that philosophy not only applies to your customers, but your competition as well.
Yeah. And you know, they feel, you know, I don't know all my competitors.
No, of course not.
But, you know, some have made it a point to reach out, you know, and compliment us, and I do the same. You know, on Facebook a couple of months ago, there was an iNews anchor who was like, hey, know any framing companies in Denver, you know, that do good work. A competitor of ours in Centennial recommended us to them. And,
wow.
you know, that was really, I thought that was really cool of him to do that. And, you know, I would absolutely do the same thing. And there have been times where if there's for one reason or another, we couldn't do something in the time frame or, you know, what have you, we've sent them elsewhere, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it really, we're all in this together. I think we should all support each other, even if we're in the same industry. And I think that mentality is a lot better than having a negative approach to it.
Well, yeah, you're not building, you know, an empire to lord over yeah. all the framing yeah. everywhere, right?
Yeah, I don't want to be like the frame king of Denver, you know. But
Cool
well,
title,
maybe Lodo, but you know, yeah. but you know, I think.
This is America. No monarchy here.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, I think we're all in this together, and we should help each other when we can.
That's fantastic, Jared. All right. Well, give us the plug. Tell us where we are physically. Give us the website. Plug whatever you want. It's all
great.
Yours.
Oh, thank you. We are located on 15th Street between Blake and Wazee. That's 1528 15th Street. We're open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 on Saturday. Our website is www.fastframeoflodo.com. And, yeah, if you're in the neighborhood, come by and see us.
And don't forget the $40 off coupon. Right?
Yeah, don't forget the $40 off coupon.
All right, Jared, appreciate the time very much. Continued success to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And that'll do it for episode 40 of the John of All Trades podcast. Big thanks to Jared Perrott for sitting down with me in his store during business hours where business was being conducted and chatting with me about how he came to own this store, the value he places on customer service, his involvement with the Rockies, making Face Eater, just an enormously entertaining chat. I enjoyed it very much. I hope you did too. We'll be back next week. Next week is going to be the last episode of 2014. So look alive for that. We've got a great guest. I'll announce that on Monday. Check us out on Facebook, J-O-A-T Pod. Also on Twitter, J-O-A-T Pod. If you are listening on iTunes, thank you very much. Please take a moment to give us a rating. Write us a review. Please help us increase our ranking in iTunes. Tell a friend about it. Go to Stitcher. We are also on Stitcher. If you are streaming us on there, we very much appreciate it. Give us a rating and a review there. That would just mean the world to us. So share the John of All Trades podcast far and wide. I've got some great content brewing for you in 2015. I have been working extensively on booking guests for that. So book alive for that. I think once we get closer to the holidays, I'll have some more announcements. Exciting times around here. We are done for this week. I'm going to wrap up shop. And in the new way that we close out each episode, I'd just like to say goodnight, Gracie.